supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today. Video games are a big part of children's lives today. The technology is more graphic and interactive than ever before, and this has many parents concerned. How do the hours and hours spent in front of the computer affect children? Is there a connection between violent video games and aggressive behavior? And if so, what is it, and what do parents need to know, and what can they do? Those are just some of the questions we'll be talking about today. And my guests are Dr. Douglas Gentile and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner. Dr. Douglas Gentile runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University, where he studies the effects of media on children and adults. He is the co-author of Violent Video Game Effects on Children and Adolescents, Theory, Research, and Public Policy. Dr. Gentile, welcome to Voices in the Family.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Lawrence Kuttner co-authored Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games. He is the co-founder and co-director of the Harvard Medical School Center for Mental Health and Media. Dr. Kuttner?
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And of course, we want to hear from you. So if you want to join the conversation, please give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Now, let me start with this question. We did a show on this topic about 10 years ago, and I think the title of the show was Digital Childhood. And we had a lot of questions, but if I remember correctly, we didn't have a lot of answers. The researchers seem to have just as many questions as we did. Let me start with you, Dr. Gentile. What do we have today in terms of the body of research? What do we have, you know, what have we studied?
Mm-hmm. I think you're exactly right. 10 years ago, video games were just beginning to really be studied. And we have a lot more studies, and they fall into a couple different groups. One is on whether violent video games have an effect, and what type of effect that is, whether that's a cognitive effect or an emotional effect or a behavioral effect. We have studies on how much time kids are spending and what effect just the amount of time might have. And we have a number of other types of studies that haven't really coalesced into a group that look at different types of effects, either specific learning effects, what can you learn from this educational game, or effects that are a little harder to classify, such as how it might affect your visual attention skills or other specific skills.
And Dr. Kuttner, let me turn to you. I want to put this a little bit into historical context. I'm sure parents and policymakers have always been worried about the influence of new media. When I was a kid, the big culprit was cable television, and all of us were spending too much time watching television. So maybe give us a little bit of a context of how we have worried and about what.
Well, we have a long history of worrying about the introduction of new media that dates back more than a century. When I was growing up as a very young child in the 1950s, the big concern there was comic books. We now consider them to be quite classic comic books. In the 1930s, there was tremendous concern over gangster movies. As a matter of fact, you were not allowed to show the dynamiting of trains in films out of fear that teenagers would blow trains up all over the country. In the 1890s, it was concerned about the paperback novel. But what's going on here is we have a moving target. I think what Doug said earlier is spot on. But we have a moving target. 10 years ago, when kids were playing video games, they tended to play them in an arcade. It was a different environment. It was a different type of game. And what we saw as violent then would barely qualify as violent now. But the real issue is, you know, what can we take from the research that we have and apply that to what does this do to a typical child? And does it do anything that we should be worried about? And if not the typical child, which kid should we specifically be concerned about or not be concerned about?
And Dr. Gentile, is one of the big differences also that these games are so interactive, that now I'm not watching a train being blown up, I'm the one blowing the train up.
Certainly that's one of the concerns. In fact, the Nintendo Wii has really changed a lot of that, where now you actually move your hands around to actually mimic the motions that you would have to do. So if you're playing baseball, you actually have to swing, and it sits there and times how fast you swing and at what height and whether you connect with the ball. But you can also play very violent games where you are stabbing people and practicing all those motions. And that does have a lot of people very concerned that the interactivity, you know, and we know it makes some sense that people tend to learn better when they do, rather than when they just watch or hear something. The research on that still is fairly, I'd say, equivocal. Does it have a bigger effect than TV or movies? At least the violent aspect is really the only aspect that's had any particular evidence trying to compare them. And it doesn't seem to be such a dramatic effect at any rate that we should be that much more concerned about the interactivity.
And I want to get to the effects. Both of you have done research to that question. But before we get there, let's get a little bit off just the big picture. What do we know? How much time do kids spend playing video games? What are some of the numbers that you've seen, Dr. Gentile?
Well, the numbers that I have in my studies tend to be the average American, say about, you know, 10 or 12-year-old is putting in about 9 hours a week playing video games. But there's a big sex difference in America. For girls, that number tends to be about 6 hours. For boys, it tends to be about 13 hours.
And Dr. Kuttner, at what ages do kids start playing video games?
Well, they'll start playing often at quite young ages. I mean, we did a large survey of kids 12, 13, 14 years old when they were, you know, well into this. And we found that almost half the boys were playing 6 or more hours per week. About 1 in 8 played more than 15 hours per week. And as Doug was saying, you know, boys are about 10 times more likely to play 15 hours per week than girls. But for when it starts, you often will see 3-year-olds who are playing online games that are aimed specifically at young kids, and also some console games.
And For your research, how did each of you define a violent video game? Dr. Gentile, let's start with you first.
Sure, I define them the way kind of a traditional aggression researcher would, that to be counted as violence, it has to include that you are committing intentional harm to another game character who would not want to be harmed. And this is the way aggression researchers tend to define it, you know, in the real world. So playing, say, what we might think of as an aggressive sport like football would not count as a violent game, because your intention is not to actually injure the other players or to kill the other players, although there are some sports games that now include that. So that's how we've defined it in our research.
I think that's actually an excellent question, because all too often people confuse violence with aggression, with even activity. And a lot of this, when you look at effects of media, you really have to be careful. You know, if you look at the local Cineplex and there's a Jet Li movie that's been playing, and you watch teenagers come out of it, especially teenage boys, it's pretty likely that they're going to be excited and they're going to be punching and kicking each other. And in that context, that's play. That isn't violence. And you need to be careful when you do research or when you start looking at public policy as to how do you define your terms? What exactly do we mean, and how does that translate in the real world?
And Dr. Gentile, I think on the other hand, you point something out that, you know, when we're talking violent games, we might think Grand Theft Auto. But there's also games where there's a cute little character that's beating the heck out of another cute little character and there's some happy music in the background. But that would then, in your definition, be a violent game.
Well, if we define it as intentional harm, then it doesn't matter if it's bloody, it doesn't matter if it's graphic, it doesn't matter if it's very cartoonish. It matters if the game characters are doing something that injure other characters in some way that they wouldn't, you know, you assume they wouldn't want to be. So in some of our studies, we have these, you know, basically children's games where you have a little ray gun and it's happy, bouncy colors and music, and nothing really dies. They just disappear. And it was a real shock to us, actually, in this study, that after practicing intentional harm to game characters, kids and adults would then, when given an opportunity to continue practicing intentional harm to another person after playing the game, they did so at a higher rate than if they'd played a matched nonviolent game.
I want to get to the findings of both of your studies in just a little bit. And here's a question that I have. There are ratings that refer and that categorize these games. And later on, I do want to discuss what you think in terms of the usefulness of these ratings and so on and so forth. But right now, just so everybody understands the terms we'll be using, can you explain, Dr. Kuttner, how are these games, what are the terms that are used to rate the games?
Well, different countries have different systems. In the United States, we have the Entertainment Software Rating Board, the ESRB, and they assign things, whether they're appropriate for everyone, an E rating, or whether it's a T rating, which is for young teens and up, an M rating, which is mature rating. That's what most of the very violent commercial games, the Grand Theft Autos, are. There's also an AO rating, and that's the stuff that doesn't get sold at the local Walmart. A lot of that is highly sexual content. But most people, if you look at a commercially produced game, you know, in the U.S., you'll see E for the majority of games, then T, then M, and then a bunch of content descriptors, some of which are fairly clear and some of which are pretty obscure as to what they mean. And that gives you an idea of what might have been the basis for the M rating or the T rating. It could be for violence, it could be for language. One of the ones I find confusing is I still don't understand really what comic mischief is supposed to be in one of these.
The M rated games is what probably we'll be talking about most here in this part of the discussion.
Those are the minority of games, and actually the minority of games that we found teenagers like to play, but those are the ones that draw the most concern and are most likely to be cited by politicians and pundits.
We're talking about video games and kids today on Voices in the Family. Our guests are Dr. Douglas Gentile and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner. Dr. Gentile runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University, and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner co-authored Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games. We'll be right back after a short break. If you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. I'm Maiken Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, and this is Voices in the Family, right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2. 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, Barack Obama's political roots in Chicago. We talk with Ryan Lizza, who's been following the Obama campaign for the New Yorker magazine. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Maiken Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today. We're talking about kids and video games, especially violent video games. And joining us are Dr. Douglas Gentile and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner. Dr. Gentile runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University, and he's the co-author of Violent Video Game Effects on Children and Adolescents, Theory, Research, and Public Policy. Dr. Lawrence Kuttner co-authored Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games. He's the co-founder and co-director of the Harvard Medical School Center for Mental Health and Media. And our number is 1-888-477-9499. Now, both of you have done extensive research on the topic of the effect of violent video games on kids. Dr. Gentile, let's start with you. Maybe describe the most comprehensive study you've done on the subject and what you were looking for.
It's tough. I've done a number of different types of studies. And I think it's important just to briefly review, you know, there are several types of studies. There are what are called correlational studies, where you basically just survey kids, and you can find out a lot about real-world behaviors that way, but you can't find out, you know, about causality, because either thing, you know, the games could cause aggression or aggression could cause games. You just can't tell from that. In an experimental study where you have control over what games they play and then you can, you know, tightly control everything, then you can find out about causality, but then you can't look at real-world behaviors such as, you know, in my studies, I can have the kids come in and I can randomly assign them to play a violent or nonviolent game, but then I can't actually let them beat each other up for ethical reasons. And then there's a longitudinal study where you can measure the same kids over time, and that also allows you to get at causality to some extent because you can see what comes before what. And so I guess I'll talk about one of my longitudinal studies where we surveyed third, fourth, and fifth graders over the course of a school year. And we found that the kids who were playing the most violent video games at the beginning of the school year had actually changed to become more verbally aggressive and physically aggressive and less relational and less pro-social in their behaviors. And that's as measured by their peers and by their teachers, which was really remarkable to me because, of course, the peers and teachers don't know what they're playing at home, but they could actually see the change in behavior over a school year. Over just 6 months, which also surprised me. I think this is a much slower moving type of issue than that, but the behaviors were seeable in the school over just 6 months.
And do you think that more aggressive kids, or I know your study took personality traits into account, so do you think a kid that is naturally more aggressive would seek out an aggressive kind of game?
Yes, certainly kids who are more aggressive do seek out more games, but and often this is the question, you know, which is it a chicken or egg, which starts it? My answer to that is I actually don't care, because I think what starts the ball rolling isn't the important question. What matters more to me is what gives that ball direction and momentum. So yes, some kids start off more naturally aggressive just based on their personality temperaments, and they do seek out more media violence. But that, in turn, seems to continue to, you know, push that aggressive ball in more aggressive direction. It's not going to make them less aggressive. And in other studies, we found, for example, if you take the least naturally aggressive kids, if they don't play violent video games, only 4% of them have been involved in a fight in the past year, which is what you'd expect. They're not naturally aggressive, and they're not playing violent games, and they're not getting into fights. But if you take the same low aggressive kids, but they play a lot of violent video games, it's an almost 10 times increase of their risk of getting into a fight. It jumps up to 38% of them have been involved in a fight in the past year. So it looks like even the not naturally aggressive kids, if they're playing a lot of these games, it could change them to become more willing to think aggressively and feel aggressively and then ultimately start to behave more aggressively.
And what differences did you see between boys and girls?
In my studies, we find almost none. Certainly, girls are less likely to play violent video games, and they are less likely to be physically aggressive. But the girls who spend a lot of time playing violent games also tend to be the girls who hit. So it's lower likelihood, but the effect seems to be the same on them.
And Dr. Lawrence Kuttner, you did a lot of this type of research for your book, Grand
Well, we
Theft.
Did a different type of research. Right. We had a $1.5 million grant from the Department of Justice to do what's known as an epidemiological study. That is, we wanted to look at the natural environment in which kids play games and how much they play and what they play and who they were and what they liked and all of those things. So rather than the more typical experimental study, which is also, you know, needed, the lab-based studies, we dealt with over 1,200 kids in 7th and 8th grade, so they were 12, 13, 14 years old, and over 500 of their parents, to find out what they were doing, where they were doing this, and how this seemed to be related to their behavior in the real world. I mean, one thing that was obvious to us, at least, is if you listen to what politicians and pundits are saying, now not what the researchers say, but what the politicians and people who are, you know, making the newspapers are saying, that violent games
put all kids at risk. If you look at violent behavior, especially criminal violent behavior, that's gone down significantly among teenagers in the past 15 years. And at the same time, violent video game play has gone up exponentially. So for the typical child, there's clearly not a causal relationship either way there. But what we're looking at is, are there patterns of play that could help us identify which kids are at risk for real-world behavioral problems? And we thought, if we're not going to see it with the violent crime issue, we should be looking at more common things like bullying or destroying property and things like that. So we went at it with a different approach, and we also talked to 500 of their parents and did surveys of them to find out what their concerns were. And we found, you know, a lot of things with that. One of them is, you know, that if you look at the games that the kids list as their favorites, and we did this a couple of years ago, but if you look at the boys, 12, 13, 14 years old, their most commonly listed game among their favorites was the Grand Theft Auto series.
Mm-hmm.
That's an M-rated game. In theory, they shouldn't be able to buy that. Number two was Madden NFL Football. If you look at the girls, number one was The Sims, which is an E-rated game, you know, for everyone. But number two for the girls was Grand Theft Auto. And that surprised the heck out of us. You know, we never would have expected that. And that's something that needs to be looked into. You know, what is it about Grand Theft Auto that is attractive to these girls? You know, is it the sandbox quality, the fact that you can do all sorts of things? We have some preliminary evidence that while the boys may go on missions and rise through the ranks and play by the rules, the girls tend to use it more as a rich environment and explore and, you know, deliver pizzas and do all sorts of things that you can do in that type of environment and treat it differently. We just don't know yet.
So you think it is more the environment that might cause a child to ultimately be more aggressive, be violent, and not so much the game itself?
Well, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's what appears to be happening based on the research data that we have is that if your child is playing at least one M-rated game regularly at a young age, and if they're playing a lot of them, that is, that we found what's called a dose-response relationship, that the more M-rated games a child listed among favorites, the more likely they were to get into some fairly typical, rather petty behavioral problems, you know, getting into trouble at school, being a bully, destroying property. Still, the majority of kids who fit this profile don't have those problems, but you are at increased risk. So that means, as a parent, as a teacher, if you see a child, especially a girl, is playing a bunch of M-rated games, that should be a warning sign that you should pay closer attention to what's going on with that child. It doesn't mean the games are the problems, but the games are like a flag. And they may tell you this child may be attracted to violence or may have problems, or the games may be the cause of it. You know, we don't know.
Dr. Gentile, do you want to quickly comment on that, and then we'll get to the phones?
Yeah, I think Larry says something that's really important here. And he used an important word, and that's risk. And I think it's important to realize that when we're talking about something like aggressive behavior, we're talking about something that is multi-causal, and all human behavior, you know, has many, many causes. So if you ask, you know, what makes a kid aggressive, well, there's no one answer. There are actually hundreds of answers, and there are about 100 documented risk factors for aggression. Media violence is just one of those risk factors. It's not the biggest. It's also not the smallest, by the way. But it is different from most of the other risk factors in that it's the one that's easily controlled. So poverty is a risk factor for aggression, but you can't tell a family in poverty, get out of poverty.
Yeah.
But even that family with very limited means can say, no, you can't play this game, play this one instead. And so this is where the cutting edge of the research is today. It's trying to understand, are there certain types of risk factors that make media violence or violent video games perhaps have more of an effect on that kid than this kid? And if we want to talk about, you know, what's going to make the kid be aggressive, well, what's going to make a kid be aggressive isn't usually any one thing. It's multiple risk factors. So if you have if you look at, say, the killers at Columbine, they had a number of them, uninvolved parents, psychiatric illnesses, they had been bullied, and they consumed a lot of violent video games and violent movies. Was that the thing? Well, no, it's one of the things. And every one of those risk factors increases the risk, and every one we take away decreases it. And if we're going to talk about risk factors, we need to talk about protective factors. And those include things like getting good grades in school, having involved parents, having parents, you know, pay attention to your media habits and set some limits around those, having friends who are not antisocial, etc.
And
this is why most kids can actually consume a fair amount of media violence, and they're never going to do something seriously violent, certainly not at a criminal level.
There are those protective factors, and we want to...
They have some protective factors.
Yes.
Does that make it okay for the kids? I'd say no, it's still kind of heating it up for them, but they're never going to rise to a really serious violent level because they've got enough protective factors.
And we will get more to those protective factors in just a minute. Let's get a call in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Joyce on the phone. Hi, Joyce. You're on Voices.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Taking my call. I'm wondering where the information that girls are not necessarily more violent than boys, because if anybody has had a junior high girl or a high school girl, in my experience, both personally and as a mom, they're not necessarily less violent. I think they have options now to be more violent, not only on the sports field, but on the video games. But I don't think they're any less violent.
I think, Joyce, you make an important point. There are different types of aggression, and researchers have noticed over the past 20 years that girls really aren't any less aggressive, but they show it in a different way generally. They're less likely to hit someone than a boy is, but they're also much more likely to do what's called relational aggression, where they do things like, you know, I'm having a party and you're not invited, or ignoring people or spreading rumors, which is just as aggressive. It's intentional harm, but it's not harm to your physical body. It's harm to the relationships I have with you or you have with other people. And so certainly girls can be every bit as aggressive. It just tends to show up in a different way.
They tend to be more verbally aggressive, and one reason for this is they tend to be more skilled verbally than boys are. And so it's an easier task for them. But you're right. You do find highly physically aggressive girls, but they're much less common than highly physically aggressive boys. They do exist.
Let's get another call in. We have Michael on the phone at 1-888-477-9499. Hi, Michael. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi. I had an observation to share. My son is 10 years old, and the games he tends to play are the Pokemon games, and these games, from me playing alongside with him from time to time, seem to be where the characters, they compete with each other, they fight, but the loser faints, so they're not harmed. But I guess the observation is when he plays these games, I see him being very competitive, different than what he's not as competitive in other things, whether he plays sports or something like that. And I wouldn't describe him as an aggressive kid, but even the Pokemon game, I can see a certain aspect of that personality coming out. And it definitely has to be limits that my wife and I set with him, because he would, he could easily play that for many, many hours.
So, Michael, let me ask you this. Do you see this competitiveness as a bad thing then, or is it maybe not a bad thing because if your child is not very competitive, maybe it's nice to see that side of him?
I do enjoy seeing that side of him. I guess part of me would like, since I was never really into video games myself, I would like to see more of that competitiveness in other areas. It doesn't have to be sports, but in other areas of activities than the video game.
Bring it out in a different channel. Okay, well,
yeah.
let's turn to our experts, Dr. Kuttner.
I think the odds are that you will see that brought out in other fields. As he explores, especially at his age, as he explores other opportunities, as he explores other types of relationships, he'll try out different approaches to them, some of them more aggressive, some of them not. One thing that's, I think, very important for parents to keep an eye on, it is normal for kids, even adolescents, to have difficulty sort of breaking away from these games, just as they have difficulty breaking away from all sorts of things. But if your child is more upset after playing a video game, or more wound up, that's a cause for concern. Most kids actually feel better. They're more relaxed. They're more laughing after playing a video game than when they start. So it's unusual if your child is worse off at the end, and that's a cause for concern that, you know, maybe this kid is having problems in other areas and could use some help.
And Dr. Gentile, I wanted to ask you a follow-up question about the violent behavior. Do you think kids are learning this kind of behavior from playing the games? Is it what they see in the games that makes them more aggressive? Is it that they see all this violence in the game and thus think it's okay to hit another child? What do you think it is if you believe that these violent games can contribute to children's behavior?
Sure. Well, it's a really great question and a very complicated answer. That there are a number of levels at which psychologists have tried to understand what goes into making a kid be more willing to be aggressive. And some of that is at an emotional level that, you know, and when you play a violent game, often you feel a rush from it, and that's because you've got this, you know, basic arousal, and you're training yourself to have these emotional and arousing feelings when you see an aggressive stimulus, and that just becomes trained because you practice it. You're also training yourself to become vigilant for enemies, and so then when I get bumped in the hallway, I might stop assuming it was an accident and start assuming it had hostile intent, because I just become very used to seeing the world kind of through blood red colored glasses, I guess. And it does do things. We haven't really studied this very well with video games, but it's studied with other aspects of aggression or media violence. It does tend to make people start seeing violence as just more typical in the world, more acceptable. It's more acceptable to say mean things to people or to hit them. And so it's a number of psychological levels on attitudes, on beliefs, on how they just perceive what happens around them, as well as their own feelings and thought patterns.
It was very interesting when we did our research on these 1,200 kids who are 12 to 14 years old, and we also did a set of focus groups and kids the same age. They were very clearly able to distinguish between fantasy and reality, and many of them were very protective. If we spoke to kids about, what if you had an 8-year-old brother or sister, would you let them play a violent video game? They say, no. Well, why not? And they would actually give the same answers their parents gave. You know, the kids might act impulsively, act inappropriately, get into trouble, you know, all of those things. But what they were very concerned about for the younger kids was swearing. And you think about that, you know, in a lot of these games, the kids in the real world are not going to be able to hijack cars or blow up buildings or, you know, do any of the really dramatic stuff. But what they can do in the real world is swear. And they were very protective of younger siblings about this, saying things like, if my brother did this, people would think my mom didn't raise us right. One of my favorite quotes from a focus group. So they are sensitive to this. But Doug is absolutely right that we do know that people who watch the most media, especially things like broadcast news, view the world as a much more dangerous place than people who watch less of that medium.
And Dr. Gentile, do you agree that kids are able to distinguish, or with what the kids are saying themselves, are they able to distinguish between what's happening in the games and what's happening in real life?
Oh, definitely. In fact, I think this is one of the places where we've, you know, grabbed hold of the wrong end of the stick and beat about the bush with it pretty regularly, if I can mix metaphors, that the fantasy reality distinction, certainly it is true that very young kids, you know, 6 and younger, do have a very different understanding of what fantasy and reality are. But I don't think that seems to matter with regard to media violence and or even, you know, general media effects. For example, you know, every adult knows that advertisements are fake, right? But they still work.
Yeah.
It, you know, just knowing that it's not real actually doesn't seem to matter very much. And what seems to matter, I think, more is what are you, you know, think about it as, you know, how do you memorize a phone number? You look at it and over and over again, right? You repeat it over and over again. That puts it into your brain. The same type of thing. Whatever we practice, we are going to get better at. And if we practice thinking in an aggressive way, we're going to get better and quicker at it. And that's kind of what's happening, not whether it's fake or not.
Yeah, but if we, you know, we can spend a lot of time remembering a phone number, we don't necessarily feel compelled to dial it. You know, it's the translation to action. And you know, as what Doug was saying earlier about the, these are complex behaviors in a complex environment, and that the simple explanations don't hold, I think he's absolutely right with that. Unfortunately, what's often promoted in the media, not by researchers, but by, you know, people who have an agenda with that, is to say that this is simple and that we have the answers, and to define a medium essentially dangerous to all children, when the data really don't support that.
And we'll talk more in just a minute. Let's take a short break. We're talking about kids and video games. Our guests are Dr. Douglas Gentile and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner. Gentile runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University, and Kuttner is co-founder and co-director of the Harvard Medical School Center for Mental Health and the Media. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, and this is Voices in the Family, right here on WHYY 91 FM.
50 years ago, Edward R. Murrow asked the question, what do you believe?
I believe in a world where men may dwell in peace.
I believe that one should work for the glory of God and not for personal glory.
I believe that friendship is the most important thing in life.
I'm Jay Allison. Join me as we explore the remarkable history of This I Believe.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
Next time on Day to Day, you could throw out your old broken radio and your beat-up iPod, or you could recycle them.
The original Bakelite buttons work the iPod. And that's pretty amazing.
It's a new way of living.
The maker movement perfectly meshes with the economy of being a cheap way to extend the lifetime of what you have.
Turning your old trash into new treasures, next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today. We're talking about video games and kids. Our guests are Dr. Douglas Gentile and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner. Gentile is the co-author of Violent Video Game, Effects on Children and Adolescents, Theory, Research, and Public Policy. And Kuttner is the co-author of Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games. And you can join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. We'll get back to the phones in just a moment. But let me ask both of you, we've talked a lot about the negatives, but obviously we've established that there's learning involved when kids are playing these games. So what are some of the positive skills that kids can learn from video games? I'm not necessarily talking about Grand Theft Auto, but some of the other games.
Well, it's interesting because I get asked that question all the time. And my response often comes as a surprise to reporters who are thinking in terms of hand-eye coordination or figure-ground perception, sort of technical things. I have an 18-year-old son who's fascinated by international politics and international affairs. And he became interested in that because of video games. He started out playing games that were historical recreations and went into games where you can create your own society and culture and sort of play that out. And that fascinated him enough that he started reading more about the topic. And then from that went on to now he happens to be spending the summer studying intensive Arabic. He's interested in Middle Eastern affairs. And so one of the things that I think gets underplayed with many of the games that are out there, especially the ones that are complex simulations, they're not necessarily violent, is that they can really spark an interest in a much broader range of things.
And Dr. Gentile, let me follow up with you. When we think about kids playing games, we think of, oh, the loner sitting in front of the TV playing his, you know, game console for hours, doesn't have any friends. But a lot of times these games take place with social interaction, right?
Oh, yes. And the lone gamer, I think, is becoming a thing of the past. That, in fact, the future of gaming, in my opinion, really is connected over the Internet games. For example, and what are often called massively multiplayer online games,
mm-hmm.
The biggest one being World of Warcraft, which has, I believe, over 10 million subscribers now. So that means you can get on and play with 10 million of your closest friends. And there you're dealing with people all over the world who have different viewpoints or different ideas, different religions, and you can get exposed to them in a way that, you know, many kids wouldn't be able to otherwise, and you have to be able to, you know, learn to deal with them. And I think that brings a whole host of potential benefits.
Yeah, when we were doing our focus groups, we went into some inner city areas, and these kids were really proud of the fact that they had made connections with other kids all over the country and all over the world through some of these games.
I'm sure all of this, it's a tough area for parents to navigate. There are benefits, everybody is playing, there are negative side effects. So I want to get a little bit to the parenting side of this issue. Let's get to Lisa on the phone. She is joining us. Hi, Lisa, you're on Voices in the Family.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What's
I was just wondering, if you have a child who's normally not violent, you know, and you're doing your best to rear them that way, do you think it's okay to expose them to these violent games? And, you know, Grand Theft Auto comes to mind, but many of them are violent. You know, there's war games and everything. Do you think that's okay, even if your child is normally not a violent or aggressive child?
How old is your child?
Well, I have a few kids that I'm thinking of. One's 11, one's 15, and one's 16.
I think, first of all, you should realize whether you want it or not, the odds are your child will be exposed to this. One mother we spoke to had a marvelous phrase. She said she doesn't allow Grand Theft Auto in her house, but somehow her kids know all the characters and what they do.
Absolutely.
So, you know, clearly they're getting that. I think it's important that you help your child get a perspective on this. One of the concerns that was not raised yet that I think is important is a game like Grand Theft Auto, or any of the series in Grand Theft Auto, contains a lot of satire. And young teenagers are really bad at picking up on what's satire. They take things more literally. They may not get the cultural references. And so they may view the game differently than older kids do. But what's really important is that you have a relationship with your child where if he or she is exposed to this, or even exposed to some of the racist, sexist, neo-Nazi games that are on the web, and confused by it or upset, that they can come to you and say, you know, what's going on here?
Let me add to that. The research has not yet been done with video games, but there is some good research with television and movies that shows that when parents do sit and watch what their kids are seeing and hearing and talk to them about it, it seems to mitigate almost all of the negative effects, and it also enhances the positive effects. However, if you sit and watch with them but don't talk about it, then it enhances the negative effects. So what is really critical is opening this very, this communication channel so that you can talk about what you agree with, what you disagree with, why you make the choices you do, whether you think, you know, things are portrayed realistically or not, and get the kids to start being much more savvy consumers so that then when they go over to Jimmy's house and they see something you never would have let them see, they still come and tell you about it, and you get an opportunity at that point to help them understand it in the way you want to.
I have a question for both of you, and I don't know if there is any research on this topic yet, but as a parent, I'm sure people are worried about maybe the lack of creativity in these games. I remember when I was growing up, we made our own games, and we mostly role-played all day. We created a scenario, everybody was assigned a character, and then we went. Nobody told us, okay, this is what you're going to play. We didn't play board games for 10 hours a day. And, you know, sometimes I hear people say, oh, kids don't play tag anymore, or kids don't know how to play. And I'm sure that oversimplifies what's going on, but is it right for a parent, is it normal to be concerned about a lack of creativity with these games?
Well, the amount of creativity in the individual games varies tremendously. Like most things in the media, most of what's out there is going to be pretty bad on any dimension you want to measure. But what we found when we surveyed our kids who were young teenagers, many of them were attracted to specific games because they were so creative. That's what causes them to stick around for the 6 or 7 hours or whatever they happen to be playing on an extreme basis. Most kids didn't play that long by any means. But because it was so creative, because they got to explore, because they got to try out new roles in ways that they can't do with a lot of the other games they have. The other issue is kids seem to be attracted to games in which they assume a powerful role. And that might be through a Grand Theft Auto type of game, or it might be through Madden NFL football. You know, you get to put together your dream team. And that's a sense of power that teenagers and preteens crave but don't have in the real world.
I think also here, it's important to realize that... Now I've forgotten what I was going to say. Larry, your answer was so good, I got confused by it. That although this research hasn't been done specifically with video games, it was done with television in the 70s, where this was a big concern at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is TV stifling children's imagination? And what we found was, no, it didn't seem to make kids less imaginative. Kids still imagined, still did pretend play. It did, however, change what they played. And that their play, their imaginative and creative play, tended to then become very dominated by media themes, things that they had seen previously, like, you know, superhero type things.
Yeah.
Rather than just making up things, you know, all on their own. It didn't make them less creative or imaginative, but it did change the quality of it. And we haven't seen, you know, we haven't done that research with video games yet, but my guess is it would be similar.
And both of you, let's start with you, Dr. Gentile. How much screen time, or what are some of the guidelines that parents can look at to see how much video game time is okay at what age?
Sure. Well, I just rely on what the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends. And they recommend no more than 1 to 2 hours of total screen time. So that's add up TV and video games and computer use and handheld and DVDs. No more than 1 to 2 hours total screen time per day. And they mean the 1 hour for elementary age school kids, and they mean the 2 hours for secondary school.
Yeah, I have a slightly different approach, because the American Academy of Pediatrics says they, you know, they have clear guidelines, but they're not necessarily based on science. If I look at it and let kids' development, I pay attention much more closely to other things. If your child is doing well in school, if your child has at least one good friendship that's a reciprocal friendship, if your child's, you know, showing up on time for meals and acting fairly respectfully most of the time towards other people, especially towards you, and doing has reasonable grades, I don't really worry that much about the amount of time a child is spending, be it watching television or playing video games. That tends to be self-limiting. The kids who are struggling with, who don't have any friends, who are struggling in school, I would approach those issues, and often then video games can be a marker of a problem. But you don't want to say, I'll solve the problem at school by attacking the amount of time the child's playing video games. You want to get at what the underlying issue is.
So
sometimes it's a bit of a red herring.
With everything else that we've talked about, it's the context. Let's see if we can get one more call in. We have Daniel on the phone. Daniel, we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask you to ask a question quickly.
Sure. Well, fortunately, my question seems to have slightly been approached already, in that I was wondering about a parent's interactivity and if that had an effect, and what kind of effect, in that if parents were buying M-rated games for younger children, I mean, obviously the children are learning that their parents are, to a certain degree, bending the law already. But does that also have a positive effect in allowing children to make their own mistakes and learn from it? And then similarly, both our guests already spoke that, you know, the bystander effect, that if nobody does anything, if their parents don't interpret this for them, then it'll have greater negative effects. And, of course, obviously, on the flip side of that, if they do interpret it for them, it'll have a much more positive effect. But I was wondering if you approached any parents who played video games themselves.
Yeah, we talked to a lot of parents who played video games, and we actually recommend that you sit down and play with your child. As to what you buy, you know your kid better than anyone else, you know, and you can make that decision based on your child's maturity and what your values are.
And across several of our studies, we find that when parents set appropriate limits, whatever their family considers those to be, on how much time their kids are spending and what types of games they're playing, that tends to be a very powerful protective factor for kids. Those kids are getting better grades in school. Those kids are getting into fewer fights. And you might say, maybe that's not about checking ratings and setting limits. That's about being a better, more involved parent. My answer is, I don't really care, because you can't tell parents just be a better parent. You've got to give them a specific, and here's some very specifics. Set appropriate limits on amount and content, whatever those are in the context of your family.
And Dr. Gentile, I do want to touch quickly on the rating system. We don't have much time left. What do you think is working or not working about the current rating system?
Well, I think the rating systems across all the media have a number of problems. We've done research on the validity of them, whether they seem to match what parents would expect them to be. And in general, although the video game ratings tend to come out better than television and movie ratings, still there are too many times where even if you were following the ratings very carefully, your kid would get exposed to something you didn't expect they were going to. And so I think this is probably the most fruitful aspect for public policy in this country is to try to improve the rating systems. We know a whole lot about what makes a great rating system, what parents really want, but we're still kind of working with ratings version 1.0, and it's time to move on to 2.0 and start incorporating some of those ideas.
And Dr. Kuttner, just a few seconds left, a quick response.
I think what Doug said is very accurate. The other thing we found is that they're not addressing many of the questions parents have.
So that's one aspect where things could be improved. I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today and for taking the time to be on Voices in the Family.
Oh, pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Good talking to you, Larry.
Good to see you.
My guests today have been Dr. Douglas Gentile and Dr. Lawrence Kuttner. Gentile runs the Media Research Lab at Iowa State University, and he's the co-author of Violent Video Game Effects on Children and Adolescents, Theory, Research, and Public Policy. Dr. Kuttner is co-founder of the Harvard Medical School Center for Mental Health and Media, and he co-authored Grand Theft Childhood, The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games. And we'll post links to the research of both of our guests today on our website, which is whyy.org/voices. If you have a question, show idea, or a comment, please email us at voices@whyy.org. The engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Voices in the Family is produced by Gita Simons and Elisa Walters. I'm Mike and Scott, behavioral health reporter for WHYY. I'm sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today. He is back next week. Thank you for listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY 91 FM.